Welcome to the Provocateurs Podcast, enabling you to think differently about leadership.
Hello, I'm Stuart Craner. I'm the co-founder of Thinkers 50, and I'd like to welcome you to the monthly podcast series Provocateurs, in which we explore the experiences, insights, and perspectives of inspiring leaders. Our aim is to provoke you to think and act differently through conversations with some fantastic people. This is a collaboration between Thinkers 50 and Deloitte. So my co-host today is Stacey Janiak. Stacey is Deloitte's Chief Growth Officer, so she brings deep insights directly from the marketplace and Deloitte's global clients. Welcome, Stacey, and please introduce today's brilliant guest.
Thank you, Stuart. And I am thrilled to introduce today's guest, who I consider an incredible friend and mentor. And we are so pleased to have Shelley Zales with us today. I'm so excited that all of you will get to hear from her. Shelley is the CEO of the Female Quotient. It's an equality services company that creates platforms for women and solutions for organizations committed to closing the gender gap in the workplace. You might have seen or heard of its signature Equality Lounge at key industry conferences around the globe, and I'm sure we'll hear more about the Davos experience that Shelley just had. She is a pioneer in the online research, becoming the first female chief executive ranked in the research industry's top 25. And today, she works with Fortune 500 companies, impact organizations, and conscious leaders to advance equality in the workplace. And I think most importantly, she gives tremendously of her personal time to mentor women all over the world. So welcome, Shelley. It's great to see you. And I want to start at the beginning. I know you've told the story many times, but I'm not sure our listeners have heard the origins of the female quotient. Can you share that with us?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I'm so delighted to be here with both of you. And Deloitte is truly a partner that I am so blessed, honored, grateful, and inspired by. And it's a company that I've dreamed of always being a partner with. So thank you for having me with you today. So couldn't ask for anything better than this. So thank you so much. The story is a pretty crazy story, and it's definitely not a textbook one. That is for sure. There is nothing that I've ever done that comes from a textbook. And, you know, when you do things that is a first and you make things up, you kind of go with the flow and you never know what tomorrow brings. So the female quotient, the name really came, first came IQ, the intelligence quotient, then came EQ, the emotional quotient, then came FQ, the female quotient. When you add women to any equation, there's a return on equality. And that really is how the name came about. It started as something called the Girls Lounge. And the name really was on a little piece of paper. If there was a boys club, then came the Girls Lounge. The opposite of boy is girl. The opposite of club is lounge. If there's a boys club, then there's a girls lounge. And I really was the only female CEO top 25 my entire career. And I lived in a man's world, and I was tired of being alone. And as a researcher, you know, as you said, I was a market researcher, and I wanted to go to CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. I heard there was 150,000 people, less than 3% were women. And going to a conference where you are going to show up filled with technology and be this woman by herself walking the floor is kind of lonely and boring, by the way. So I decided to invite a few girlfriends, and I said, and if you know other women, please invite them. And so they did. And 24 hours later, 50 women showed up. And that's really how it all started. And that was 10 years ago. And 50 women walked the floor, and two remarkable things happened. The first was every single guy's head turned, like, where the heck did all of you women come from? And that's when I coined the phrase power of the pack. A woman alone has power. Collectively, we have impact. And it was this whoosh moment. A woman is invisible. one woman in an ocean of 150,000 men, no one notices you. But 50 women, you see big screens, little screens, fine. But you see these men's head turn. Like, where did all of you women come from? And it was this remarkable moment for me. And the second was I was surrounded by women just like me. All of a sudden, we were talking about imposter syndrome, work-life balance, all these things I never, ever talked about. And we also, power of the purse. We were all doing deals with one another. And I didn't feel alone. And it was just this amazing, empowering moment. I loved it. And we went back to my hotel room. I had a king-size bed, tiny little room, and we were in my closet all doing business with each other. And for the first time in my life, women were supporting women. I'm 60 years old. So just imagine a long time ago, there was no supporting women. We all were competing with one another. There was such a scarcity of jobs at the top. We were competitive as women in my lifetime. And all of a sudden, we were all doing business with each other. And it was this remarkable feeling. And the next day, we all invited someone else. And so 50 women turned to 100 women, and 100 women turned to 300 women. And my little, one little tiny room, next thing you knew, we were in the penthouse suite of the Four Seasons. And that's how the Girls Lounge was born. And we called it the Girls Lounge. And I thought, gosh, if I could connect women in technology, what about connecting women in marketing, in media, in advertising, in research? And Girls Lounge started at CES, and then I did it at the ANA, and then I did it at 4A's. And next thing you knew, we did pop-ups all over the world so that women would have a safe space to connect and collaborate. And then I got invited to the World Economic Forum, Davos, Switzerland. And my invitation for the Girls Lounge was as follows. We want you to come, but you might not feel welcome. And at the World Economic Forum, it was all about white badges. And that was for world leaders. And world leaders, who are world leaders? They're all men. 17% of white badges were women. So I caught my head said, who wants to go to a place you might not feel welcome? That's the cognitive. My heart said, I have to go. And I needed $250,000 to create this space in this tiny dump, because that was the only space left. And I remember going to a client saying, would you support me? I didn't have funding. I said, would you support me for the Girls Lounge? And they said, we would if you changed the name. They didn't like the name, the Girls Lounge. It didn't seem like a World Economic Forum name. And I said, I'm not going to change the name. I mean, it's historically been called the Girls Lounge. And we were pretty successful. We already were doing about 20 Girls Lounges up to this point. I said, I'm not changing the name. We have to go as the Girls Lounge to the World Economic Forum. But they didn't like the name girl because they said, we're women. I said, have you ever heard of a man object to being a boy in the boys club? Why are we creating double standards? I'm not changing the name. So they didn't support me. And I remember going to Jackie Kelly, the chief operating officer at Bloomberg. I said, would you go with me? We might be the only two in the lounge, but would you go? And she said, absolutely. So the two of us went and we created amazing programming and wasn't sure who would show up. And plenty of white badges, the men would come, peek their head in. And women who had heard of the Girls Lounge from other conferences showed up. Year two, we doubled the space. Year three, Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan came. And today we are a two-story glass house, standing room only. And of course, you know, it has quite a presence. Once women started supporting women at the Girls Lounge, and today, of course, we do 70 pop-ups all over the world as the Girls Lounge. Once women started supporting women as the Girls Lounge, I called it the Girls Lounge, the place for the 17%. Once women started supporting women, we evolved to the Equality Lounge and called it the place for conscious leaders, making it an equality lounge for everyone to come. But that was after women supported women. And the agenda, of course, was closing, changing the equation, closing the gender gap. And now, of course, it's called the Equality Lounge. And we do it all over the world, with Deloitte being one of our most important partners. And that is truly the story of the Equality Lounge.
I think the power of the purse is really important, isn't it? And that's not really talked about
But it's so true. Like, people really underestimate, you know, that women are leaders and in the C-suite and have so much power, but we underestimate, first of all, 85% of purchase decisions are made by women. And we don't even think about that, which is so unbelievably ridiculous.
So this is really taking over your life, Shelley. And well, I mean, that's the difference, that a lot of people would have had the initial excitement and the initial momentum, but then wouldn't have followed it up in the way that you have so spectacularly over the last decade.
Listen, it was not simple. You know, for the first, you know, I've been doing this now for 10 years, you know, as the Girls Lounge evolving to the Equality Lounge. Pre-pandemic, we were hosting over 70 lounges at big industry conferences. We evolved from Girls Lounge to Equality Lounge about 5 years ago. We've connected over a million women in the workplace across every industry in over 100 countries. And that's, you know, one of the pillars, you know, from FQ Experiences, which are lounges, now evolving to FQ Media, you know, in the content space, and FQ Services. So our business has evolved under the Female Quotient umbrella. And it's been, you know, a pretty remarkable journey. But, you know, at the beginning, you know, really pushing the agenda, I have to say, has been, you know, we were pre the DE&I business. You know, being in the business of equality was not popular. No one was in the business of equality. So, you know, you got to keep at it. You have to really believe in changing the equation and closing the gaps.
Well, I think you have done a tremendous job in actually changing the equation. And I personally, you know, benefited my first trip to Davos and coming to the Equality Lounge. It was such a welcoming environment. And we had, you know, amazing speakers, men and women, that it was just a much different environment than the rest of the conference. So I'm deeply appreciative of that. But you've continued to change the objectives as you see success and progress. And so be interesting to understand, you know, what the agenda is today. What do you see like that next hurdle that the female quotient, you know, can help us all jump over?
So this year was crazy because WEF published a report that says it'll take 132 years to close the gender gap. 132 years to close the gender gap. Well, in the Equality Lounge, the only agenda that we have is to close the gender gap. If you're a conscious leader, you're here, and we're going to do it in five. And, you know, President Kennedy decided to put people on the moon, men on the moon. If we had spacesuits that fit women, women would have gone to the moon. But he did that in 10 years. We had a pandemic. We created a vaccine in 1 year. We have self-driving cars. When there's a will, there's a way. If there's a priority, people make things happen. And so it set everything in this like intense intensity. And we did a call to action. We're looking for 10 Fortune 500 CEOs that will prioritize closing the gender gap. And so the conversations were just on fire and really exciting. And that's what this Davos was all about, is how we're going to close the gender gap, and not just the pay gap, but the leadership gap and the diversity gap and the sponsorship gap and the care gap and the culture gap, and creating, you know, a more collaborative environment where we're going to work together and create a priority around closing the gender gap. It's really not that complicated. We have the data. We know what we need to do. We need to close the skill gap. I mean, yeah, I spoke at the UN recently, and this was the craziest thing. We're all sitting around, the panel before me talked about the future is female by 2030. And then it was my turn. I got up and I'm like, I'm confused. How is the future going to be female by 2030 if the future jobs are tech jobs? There is no system in place. We're losing women to tech. So unless we're going to put a plan in place to fill these jobs, the future is not going to be female by 2030. So we talked about closing the skill gaps, which we all could do if we create a roadmap. We just need to be conscious, intentional, and put the plans in place. So that's what we talked about. So it was a really exciting, lit Equality Lounge with CEOs from Fortune 500 and plenty of dynamic, expert women having like engaged conversations with action plans in place.
So Shelley, I was at CES this year and had the pleasure of speaking with Joanna Lau, who's the founder of Lau Technologies and a fan of our podcast here. And she was so excited to hear that you were going to be on. She's a big fan of yours. And she said, you have to ask Shelley, what is the conversation that we should be having with our younger men leaders? You know, we've been women helping women and women helping younger women leaders advance, and having the conversations with the CEOs of the Fortune 500. But how can we speak to, how can we get these younger men that are entering leadership roles to really understand and to lean into cutting that 132 years down?
First of all, we should never talk about male allies. Like, that drives me absolutely nuts. We should talk about leadership allies, but not male allies. The second we start saying male allies, we've just given men more power. Leadership allies. There's no male, female. Like, why are we saying they're male allies? Once you say they're male allies, we basically said, you're the boss. We've already put that in their head that they're in charge. Like, don't start that way. Secondly, caregiving should be a shared responsibility. So shared responsibility at home creates equal opportunity at work. So everyone should take responsibility at home so that we can all have equal opportunity in the workplace. So that's what everyone should know. And I think that everyone should also take responsibility for care in the workplace. Like, why is it always that when the woman is a manager, she's also taking care of the team? You know, like, care is everyone's, a collaborative culture requires everyone, man, woman, to look after each other. Like, collaborative culture isn't top down or bottom up, it's all around. We all have to take responsibility for that. And I think that that goes such a long way to attracting and retaining great talent. And success in a company is about people. And I hire for passion, I train for skill. Unless you want to be a doctor, lawyer, or an accountant. And I think that is just so incredibly important. And I think men, women, we have to start rewriting job descriptions for compassion, for empathy, for resilience, for care. And that starts with our people. I don't care what your gender is. And that goes such a long way to success. If you love what you do, it's called passion. If you don't, it's called stress. We don't need that in our lives. We really don't. I love what I do every single day. This could be good days, this could be bad days. But I love what I do. And it's why I keep doing it. Listen, 10 years of being in the business of equality, I made that up. There is no one in the world in the business of equality. I own the trademark business of equality. I did it because I just realized it was time. I don't even know if, I mean, I'm 60. I don't even know if I've been paid less than men my whole career. I probably have been. I probably owed a lot of money. But I have never worked for money my whole life. I've always worked because I've loved what I've done. And that's how I got chief troublemaker. You know, I made that up too. I have broken every rule in the book because they never worked for me. I had to break every rule because I never would have been where I am today. Because the rules of the workplace did not work for me. I'm a mother of three. I have an amazing husband, but he's a butt doctor. He's a colorectal surgeon. I would never have been able to rise the ranks and done what I did following corporate rules. You know, as a young mom, I was the primary caregiver. So I would not have been able to work until midnight. I wouldn't have been able to travel like everyone else. I want to go to my kids' soccer games and all that. And I'm not even really sure that the corporate handbook said leave to go to your kid's soccer game. Like, people think you couldn't have done that. But I don't think that says that in the handbook, but you look at everyone around you and they weren't going. But I was going to my kid's soccer games, period. I left and I got in trouble for it. Well, I don't know that that's why I got in trouble, but no matter what I did, I was always in trouble for something. And that's why I had to leave and start my own company, because I had to be my own boss and write my own rules, because no matter what I did, I was doing something wrong. You know, so I decided I got to be my own boss and create the uncorporate rules so that I could no longer be the exception. I wanted to be the new norm. Right. So I decided I'm going to call myself chief troublemaker so I can have permission to break the rules and create my own.
So you're a mentor and inspiration for people now, Shelley. But who inspired you at that point, and who mentored you? Well, it wasn't completely a solo effort. I know you kind of, your energy is what moved it forward.
You know, I have so many mentors. You know, I believe in something called mentorship in the moment. I don't think that there's any one mentor, because no one has all the tricks. You learn, you know, so many things from so many different people. And I think that you get bits and bites of advice from different people who have been there, done that. So I have learned so many things from so many people, and so many things of what not to do from people that have been great advice too, you know, and I've learned great things from amazing men too. One of my greatest mentors was a man named Jerry Lukman, who, you know, passed several years ago, but he was, he taught me to have a no regret policy. I mean, my father did too, but you know, he was one of my bosses at ASI, my early career. And I remember when I went for an interview with him, he had pictures of his family on his wall, of his kids growing up. And I loved that about him. And he always told me never to miss moments that matter with your children. And he had a sofa in his office and always had personal meetings with employees. Like, he cared about his people, and he taught me about the importance of people and employees. And he taught me so much about people and about his kids. He dropped everything for his kids. And, you know, really, he had a no regret policy, and he taught me never miss the moments that mattered, and to think forward and ask yourself the question, if you're going to regret something, don't miss that moment. And it is so incredibly true that he said, no one's going to ever remember the meeting that you missed later in life, but your kids will always remember the important times that you were there. And he would always go to his kids' softball game or his, you know, and he really taught me that. So I will never forget that. And he was such an amazing person. So he really was a, he also taught me something else that I will never forget. And I think it was a Yoda, which was, there's no such thing as trying. You either do it or you don't. And he took a pen sitting. It was in my interview. It's why I took the job at ASI. He took a pen and he threw it on the floor and he said, try to pick it up. And of course, you know, I tried. And of course I picked it up, and he said, there's no such thing as trying. You either do it or you don't. And so he was a really important role model for me. And then there was another woman, Jackie Pinkowitz, who taught me what I never was going to be, which was a workaholic. she worked, and always, you know, told me that there was going to be that one day, you know. And like, I just remember one day, we went to Florida for a meeting. She was wearing like a heavy turtleneck. And I'm like, she didn't know how to smell the roses, you know. I'm not going to go into the whole story because it's too sad. But like, you got to smell the roses. Like, life is just too short. You know, you got to live in the moment. And I live in the moment. You got to love what you do. I love what I do. And so I've learned so many amazing things. And then there was another moment for me. And this is a quote that I so believe in, which Sarah Jessica Parker, trying to be a man is a waste of a woman. And I remember, you know, and everyone around me acting like a man, you know, my whole early career, I dressed in these suits and wore my hair like this and try, you know, it was not feminine because we all had to be the guy, you know, because that's how you got ahead. And then I think it was like 26 years old, and I was so privileged. As a researcher, I was told I get to go to this meeting and meet this woman, Penelope Queen. And she was this top person running an agency, 30 people working for her. And I got to go to the meeting, and I was so young, and I got to go. Jerry sent me on this meeting, and I was wearing this corporate suit and my hair like this. I didn't want to look feminine at all. I go to this meeting. I'm like, I'm Shelley Zales here to see Penelope Queen. And I go to this meeting to meet Penelope. They say, oh, right this way. And I go, and there she is, Penelope. Brown, cascading hair, makeup, wearing a purple leather suit, skirt thing. And I'm looking like this stuffy, and she's feminine and magnificent. And in that moment, I'm like, well, who am I kidding? She's a successful, gorgeous woman dressed feminine, and I'm looking like a man. I don't know who told me to do that. And in that moment, take my hair, flick it out of my ponytail, let it come out cascading. And from that moment on, I'm like, I am going to be me. I don't know why I'm trying to be someone else. And that was that. And from that day on, I owned my femininity, and I was Shelley Zales. And Oscar Wilde says, be yourself because everyone else is taken. And I never looked back from that moment on. So I have so many different mentors in my life.
Shelley, I'm going to poke a little bit more on the origin, because I've heard you talk about your mother and the impact that your mom had on you. And I think a lot of us will resonate with that. So maybe you could share a bit about the Shelley origin story.
My mom is the most important role model in my life. I'm one of four girls, and my mom actually is the strongest, most incredible woman I know. She lives actually right down the block from me. She just turned 86 3 days ago. Actually, I just found this, which is so incredible. I'm going to show you this. This is crazy. Hold on. This is my mom. I never thought about this until recently. So my mother, she was a full-time mom until we all moved out of the house, but she created the first conference for women for the state of California for Pete Wilson. She worked for the governor of California. She created Call to Action, which was Governor Pete Wilson's conference for women, November 19th, 1992.
This is in your blood.
But I never thought about that, which is crazy. So this was over 30 years ago. So when I was 30 years old, I actually remember going, so Maria Shriver took this over. I went to this conference when I was 30 years old, remembering, and I remember 5,000 women showed up, thinking to myself, why would 5,000 women, and this is right when I was just right before I started OTX, pioneering online research, starting my own company. I still was working for ASI. I hadn't left yet to start my own company, but I was thinking, why would 5,000 women show up at a conference for women? It was bizarre. And so I wasn't in equality. I just was starting. I hadn't started yet my own little company, and all these women flooding Long Beach, this conference. And I'm thinking, why are all these women coming to this thing? But I went because it was my mom. And I was sitting in the audience, and all these women were going up asking very vulnerable questions. And I'm thinking, that is so weird, you know? And then the other day I started reading like what they were talking about. And it's all the things I talk about today, 30 years ago. I mean, the anger in your life, networking for career success, women in transition, the power of money, ways women lead, male, female communication style in business, networking success, marketing for small businesses in the 90s, making a living without having a job, women in the media, the power of politics, I mean, workplace diversity. I mean, crazy. It is crazy. And I actually, and then I was reading the descriptions. This is my mother. This is who you should have on your podcast. My mother will excite and delight you and entertain you like you can't believe. And actually knows every football player, knows every quarterback, knows more about football, knows more about sports than anybody you'll ever talk to. That's my mom. And my father was a cardiologist. My mother ran the household, but also, like every president in the United States, knows her as Rosalie. There's Cher, there's Rosalie. And was the most amazing mother, didn't miss a beat. And would then come to my house after working for the governor for a full day with a car full of Costco and like fill my refrigerator and my pantry. Like, that's my mom.
So the call to action was over 30 years ago. How do you stay so positive?
You know, when you feel satisfied and, you know, you content, you know, the expression, one who's wealthy is one who's happy with what she has. That's what, to me, God bless. That's what life is. You know, I'm very, very blessed. I have the most incredible children and grandchildren and a grandchild and partner in life. And those are the most important treasures in life. And, you know, giving back with generosity is, to me, what life is all about, you know, and I really believe that.
Well, Shelley, you have provided a tremendous amount of food for thought on how we get there. And how you got here, which I think is really inspirational. But as we think about the leaders that are listening to this podcast or watching, what's some final words of advice on how we make that 132 years happen in our generation?
Anything is doable. I mean, I honestly don't think this is hard. I honestly think this is right in front of our faces. I mean, how hard is it to pay Sally the same as Peter for the same job? How hard is it to encourage all people to get to leadership positions? How hard is it to have diversity in the workplace? I mean, we have done really hard things before. These actually are easy. It's all about mindset. It's all about choice. It's actually about just rewriting the rules of the workplace for today. We have a whiteboard the rules were written a really long time ago. And we have never challenged them. We don't have to undo anything. We just have to say, here we are today. We had a nice break. You know, it was a break. It wasn't a nice break. It was a challenging one, but we had a break. Now we can write a new handbook. It's a moment in time. That's why I called it the flipping point. We are at a flipping point moment. I coined a new phrase. It was a tipping point. You wait and watch. This is a flipping point. This requires action. It's all choice. There's nothing holding us back. Now we can create what flexibility means. We're kind of all over the place. It's just making some decisions. It's just about decisions. And what we have been looking at is what's wrong or going on the defense. This is an offense moment. What does it look like? Do we want a 3-day in office and then 2-day at home? Just call it, you know? And it's just a new model. Let's just call it what it is. And, you know, pay gap. Well, it's hard because we've been thinking about retrofitting. Don't retrofit. Just make a decision. Starting forward, let's write what the new model is for the new class coming in. We can't retrofit. That might be very complicated. But if we want to close the pay gap, let's not close the pay gap. Let's just say for the new class coming in of out of college, men and women will all get paid the same for the same job. And promotions will look like this. The forward model. Forget about the backward model. That might be hard. Okay. Forget about the back. What's the forward new model? And then how do we do sponsorship? You know, let's come up with a new model that's not with bias. It's not complicated. We have solved really complicated problems. This one is not complicated, actually. With everything we've done that's complicated, this is so much less complicated than creating a vaccine. Closing the gender gap is so much less complicated than creating a vaccine, than creating a self-driving car that understands traffic patterns without people driving, than putting people on the moon. This is less complicated. That's what we have to understand. So if we actually broke down like that, I just came from Antarctica. Did you know that 55 countries signed a peace treaty 50 years ago? 50 years ago, a 3.5-page document that is still active today, maintaining, they put all this money in. Scientists are living in Antarctica and supporting the most incredible continent in the world. And it's working. And no one even knows about it and talks about it. And it works. How hard would it be to figure out how to rewrite the rules of the workplace that has a collaborative culture that maintains equality? Like, it cannot be this hard. We have done much harder things before. We just haven't sat down to talk about it because CEOs haven't made it their priority.
Shelley, we're out of time, but feminine and magnificent. If anyone can shrink 132 years to 5 years, I think your energy can certainly achieve that. I agree entirely that we are at a flipping point, and I would encourage anyone watching or listening to check out the work of the Female Quotient, and don't contemplate picking the pen up, make it happen and do it. Shelley, thank you very much.
We go together, And wherever Deloitte goes, I go with you. So sign me up with you guys.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you so much.